This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're now into the second week of a partial federal government shutdown. Many federal workers are at home, not doing their jobs. Many others are still going to work at jobs considered essential, but essentially not getting paid. Benefits for millions, benefits that are counted on for daily life, are threatened or frozen. CNN is running a ticker showing how many days into this crisis we are and how many hours away we are from the next crisis, possible government default. Some are predicting catastrophe if that happens. Others say not so big a deal. It's times like these that we often turn to art, to theater, to cinema.
He wants to shut down the protection grid, Peter.
You shut that thing down and we are not going to be held responsible for whatever happens.
No,
we won't be.
Shut it off.
Responsible. Don't shut it off. I'm warning you.
I've never seen anything like this before. I don't
know. I'm not interested in your opinion. Just shut it off.
My friend, don't be a jerk.
Step aside.
If he does that again, you can shoot him.
You do your job, pencil neck. Don't tell me how to do mine.
Thank you, officer.
Shut it off!
That's Sir Bill Murray, playing opposite the guy who plays the annoying reporter in Die Hard in the classic film Ghostbusters. Yes, perhaps a government shutdown and government default won't cause a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man-sized tragedy, but do you really want to find out? Today, it's our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse, where our panel of reporters and political observers weigh in on this political stalemate. How does Congress get out of this? How does the president get out of this? Which side isn't reaching far enough across the aisle? We also want to hear from you if you're affected by the government shutdown. Last week, we heard from some folks who are, and we would love it if you could give us a call at 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. Let us know how your daily life is disrupted by this. You can also email Where We Live at WNPR.org, or you can tweet us at Where We Live. Joining me, as always, is Colin McEnroe, the host of WNPR's The Colin McEnroe Show. Hi there, Colin.
Hi, Mr. Dankosky. I'd like to quickly point out that that guy who shuts down the Ghostbusters actually works for the EPA, and he's not working this week. So if you were really worried about a fourfold cross rip, he at least can't cause it.
He can't cause it at all. Bill Curry is here. He's our Democratic political analyst, a former advisor in the Clinton White House, and that will come into play a little bit later on in our story today. Bill, always good to see you.
Great to be here, John.
Daniela Altomare is a political reporter for the Hartford Courant. Hi, Daniela. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thank you.
And joining us once again is Isaiah Diaz, who is a lawyer and chairman of the Latino and Puerto Rican Affairs Commission. Hello there, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So, first of all, Bill, let's turn to you and ask about the time this happened before when you were actually working in Washington. When the government shut down back in 1995, you were working in the White House.
I was. And so I lived the whole thing very close range. And I was thinking of it yesterday, watching Obama's performance at the press conference, which I thought was the best he has done in throughout the crisis, in that he was reasonable and reasoned and logical and factual. And one of the things, there's an old psychological adage that you become what you hate. And in the standoff between the parties, Obama and the Democrats are often what the Tea Party always is, although – you know, in a lower way, but apocalyptic and blustery and with showing a lot of bravado, drawing lines. And I thought two things. One, that Obama seems to still have a problem, a sort of a flat line of a learning curve, that you keep drawing these lines in these ways and then you keep having to cross them. And I thought yesterday watching him, okay, less bluster, more steel, more adulthood. You know, this is to be cast in that way. And it reminded me of being in the White House. And I'll tell you the story. It involves Leon Panetta, who had gone out as the White House has been going out for the first 8 days and this and saying something very confrontational to Gingrich. And of all people, Dick Morris, sitting in the room with Clinton and Leon, turned to Leon when he came back from this encounter and said, "Listen to me, Leon. The only advantage we have in this is that people think that the president is more reasonable and more mature than Newt Gingrich. They don't even know what we're fighting about. They don't know what the underlying issues. It's our only thing. And the thing about reason is it's like a tall glass of cool, clear water. Unreason, immaturity are like ink. One drop of ink in the tall, cool, clear of water, and it's an opaque solution nobody wants. It is critical for the Obama administration, I think they began yesterday, to be absolutely restrained, disciplined, adult, and mature. And the last thing I'll just say, one thing is that both that people often say that no one even remembers what the last shutdown was about. No one knew then. But it was actually over health care, just like this one. Only Clinton had the advantage of defending a 30-year-old program that people loved. Obama's defending a one-week-old program that people don't like. It's a very different position to be in.
Well, so that's Bill's take on this, Colin. I have to say, I'm watching the president yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm not quite sure what he's saying, because perhaps for me, he's not blustery enough. I don't understand what he's angry about. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm too used to people in Washington being angry and feigning anger, but I didn't get what was wrong after listening to him for an hour and a half yesterday.
Yeah, I think Bill is right, though. And I think he's in an odd kind of bind, because in a certain way, you know, we often do react more when our viscera are touched somehow by what people say. On the other hand, he can't rise to the level of the opposition. He's got to maintain the reasonable position. He's got to sound like the more reasonable person. I would sort of say that Dick Morris's advice to Bill Clinton kind of holds here, too.
I want to actually give a little listen. Here's President Obama speaking to reporters at this White House press conference just yesterday afternoon.
This morning I had a chance to speak with Speaker Boehner, and I told him what I've been saying publicly, that I am happy to talk with him and other Republicans about anything, not just issues I think are important, but also issues that they think are important. But I also told him that having such a conversation, talks, negotiations, shouldn't require hanging the threats of a government shutdown or economic chaos over the heads of the American people.
And now here's Speaker John Boehner reacting to President Obama's comments.
As you all know, I had a phone call with the President of the United States this morning. I will say it was a pleasant conversation, although I have to say I was disappointed that the President refuses to negotiate. When it comes to the issue of funding our government, the House has passed four bills. Each of those four bills was rejected by the United States Senate. Under the Constitution and our system of government, we asked that they sit down and have a conversation with us. They refused to do it.
Okay, so we've heard from the President and John Boehner. Isaiah, how do you think that Boehner's reacting to this? What do you think of the Republican reaction?
I actually think it's long overdue, and I'll explain, because they're constantly getting pushed into the corner. Okay, we'll consent to a debt ceiling raise. We'll consent to a debt ceiling raise. With the whole fiscal cliff issue, it was you're going to take away the money from the seniors. When do you draw the line? We're approaching a $17 trillion deficit, and the Senate wants to have a holiday, so to speak, on the debt ceiling, so that until the next election. So that means that they can have, for lack of a better term, a blank credit card to borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow. But the problem is, who's going to be stuck with the bill?
Okay, who's going to be stuck with the bill? I think the question is, are we actually talking about the same thing here? Does raising the debt ceiling to avert a fiscal crisis in America and potentially the world actually line up with how we're going to decide to make fiscal policy moving forward, what programs we're going to fund later on? Are these things actually apples to apples here?
Well, Let me give you my take on it, and then you can take it for what it's worth. Put it this way. The reason that we're in the problem that we're in now is because we're constantly having to raise the debt ceiling and then raise the debt ceiling again and then raise the debt ceiling again. But there's been no compromise. Now, you played a clip from President Obama saying that he's willing to talk about any issues, and you can read a ton of comments from Harry Reid. Yeah, we'll talk about those things after we vote on the budget. Well, then it's too late, because then you've already got more debt being accumulated. So again, when does the line stop? Someone's got to agree to some spending cuts so that, and the House has been proposing bills, but the Democrats are not willing to move.
Bill?
Well, two things. First of all, the Ryan budget on the Republicans submitted increases that debt $1 trillion by their own CBO numbers. They keep saying that, but that's not their point here. And shutting down the government increases the debt even faster. And so that's the first piece. And the second piece is just that we have an example, again, to go back to the Clinton-Gingrich imbroglio and shutdown. They fought and got nothing done. And then they stopped fighting, and they resumed the government, and they stopped playing brinksmanship, and they produced the only surpluses of modern times. And they left George Bush the largest surplus that any president proportionally has inherited in 100 years, which he promptly squandered. But we have the model for adult leadership. It is not like this. There are problems on both sides. But those two ideas, that this is about the long-term debt, that's not in Ryan's numbers, and that it's better off to be confronted, that's not in our history.
Colin?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other parts about this. One of them is this Sunday in a conversation with George Stephanopoulos, Boehner admitted that he walked away from a deal with the with the Senate that was considerably lower, that came in way, way lower because they decided that Obamacare was such an incredibly momentous thing that they had to make a stand. So if they're really, really interested in coming in lower, well, I mean, they got to make up their mind about that. The other thing is, I just want to reinforce what Bill's saying. It's really expensive to do this stuff. And even short-term, even our short-term borrowing capacity right now, the short-term Treasury bills are skyrocketing right now. They've gone from 0.03 to 0.297, I think, in the space of days because, in fact, nobody wants to lend us money right now because they think chimpanzees are running our government. So it's a really...
if only.
Yeah. it's a really dangerous thing. The last thing, and this point gets made all the time, but just to be clear here, we're not talking about borrowing money for future expenditures or anything like that. This is about paying for the expenses we've already incurred, we've already, as a government, as a society, agreed to. It's not like we're going to raise the debt ceiling so we can go do more stuff. We're raising the debt ceiling so we can do the stuff that everybody already agreed to.
It's stuff that people already agreed to. And again, Democrats and Republicans, some of the things are things that Democrats like and some of the things are things that Republicans like.
Yes, that's correct. However, I disagree with respectfully with Colin's last comment. I think that some of the problems also lie with the funding of Obamacare because let's face it, people, Obamacare has not been funded yet. And I personally am not I'm kind of neutral on that. I think there are some good things in Obamacare, such as providing insurance benefits for people with pre-existing conditions. But I also think that there are some things that are bad about it, such as the mandated. Truth be told, however, that still has not been paid for. So to sit here and say that we're going to pay for things that we've already agreed to is not entirely accurate. And while I'm not as seasoned as my colleagues in the room, I would also like to say that we do have the potential for a crisis anyway. So one way or another, we have to sit down at the table. And I'm glad he made the reference to the Clinton administration, because back then, at least based on my recollection, although I was not present at the time, they did have a more amicable environment to do work in. It was not as hostile as a political climate as we're dealing with now in 2013.
It's about the most hostile political climate we can have. And quickly, Bill, I just want to tell our listeners that we're in the wheelhouse. We're talking, of course, about the federal government shutdown and the looming debt ceiling crisis. You can join us at 860-275-7266. Now, Danielle Altamare is here from the Hartford Current. Obviously, our state delegation, they're all Democrats, but they're all caught in the middle of this. What are they saying about all this?
Well, they're, you know, essentially saying what the president is saying, that, you know, time to stop, time to, you know, if you want to have discussions about things, Blumenthal said last week, you know, even on Obamacare, if you want to have discussions about things, you know, maybe there are things to make it ways to make it better. Maybe this issue of the medical equipment, medical devices tax needs to be looked at. You know, maybe there are small things we can do. We're not going to obviously scrap the whole thing. But they're essentially supporting the president. I thought he was he did make some really good points yesterday. One of the things that I found interesting, he talked to essentially what Colin was just mentioning, that, you know, this is the Republican Party, the party of business. And yet, you know, business doesn't want this. Business doesn't want either of these showdowns on, you know, either of these crises. And this will hurt the U.S. economy pretty gravely. So why are they doing this?
I think one of the things when it comes to our delegation that we can't get around is that every single week we seem to want to play some sort of tape from John Larson, who represents the, yes, the first congressional district. Last week we played him doing some sort of a bizarre Howard Dean impersonation on the floor of the House. Let's listen to him this past weekend at a forum in Wethersfield just a few days ago.
I think John Boehner is a decent person. I think he wants to do the right thing. He's trying to work through his conference, but Tom Cruise has got about 40 solid Republicans in that conference who said that they will not budge on this issue. And so the did I say Tom? Sorry, Tom.
So that's Representative Larson talking about Tom Cruise. I think we knew who he was talking about there, Daniela.
Yes.
There may be a Scientology-based solution to this that we don't know about, though. So
I would like to add, though, it's Ted Cruz, and he is a shining Latino.
It is indeed Ted Cruz. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. Some people want to get involved in the conversation. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the impact that this is having right here in Connecticut. And we want to hear from you at 860-275-7266 if indeed you are affected in some way by the partial federal government shutdown. We want to hear your voice. 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive at WNPR.org or tweet us at wherewelive. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. It's Wednesday, so it's The Wheelhouse, our weekly news roundtable. We're joined in studio, as always, by Colin McEnroe, the host of WNPR's The Colin McEnroe Show. What's on your show this afternoon, Colin?
We're going to be talking about football, actually. Part of it as a result of last night's harrowing PBS Frontline series about concussions in football, but also Jeff Benedict's book about college football. Obviously, UConn here is going through a crisis about college football as well.
So talking about football this afternoon at 1 on The Colin McEnroe Show. Bill Curry is here, our Democratic political analyst. Isaiah Diaz is here from the Puerto Rican Affairs Commission. And Daniela Altamari, who's a political reporter for the Hartford Current. We're taking your phone calls at 860-275-7266. Before we get to some of those phone calls, I just want to say streaming right now on WNPR.org is a clemency hearing for a woman named Bonnie Forshaw. You may have heard of her even on our program today. She's serving the longest sentence of any Connecticut woman for killing a pregnant woman in the mid-1980s. Since Forshaw was found guilty, there have been questions about whether she had good legal representation. State officials are meeting to discuss whether she should be pardoned. If you want to learn more and take a look at that online, it's streaming live right now on WNPR.org. Let's go to the phones. A lot of people want to join us as we talk today about the federal government shutdown and what it might mean for you. Ray is in Danbury. Hi there, Ray. You're on Where We Live.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good.
That's good. My comment is here. I mean, there's one of your panelists I don't agree with. Totally don't agree with at all. I'm sorry, I don't know his name. But he was talking about trillion dollars, $17 trillion deficit. And no one cared about that before. So it's like, you know what, the way I look at it now, get it together. Get this work out. They're working for the people of America. I have a son and daughter-in-law that's in intelligence. And my son is over in Afghanistan now working as a contractor. No one cares about those things. And it's like they got to start caring. And now they're working for us, all right? And I get upset when I see everybody battling. Okay, everyone says, oh, it's politics, or you're working for the people of America. You shouldn't be looking like high school kids throwing balls in a room at each other. When I got to sit home, I got to worry about my son overseas, and the rest of these families, I got to worry about the kids that are in the military. And let's see them work without money. Let's see them work without insurance. And that's the other thing. They complain about, okay, oh, we don't want this for insurance, we don't want that, we don't like Obamacare or anything else like that. I read 1,900 pages of that bill. It's not all that bad, and I'm willing to give it a try.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the phone call. I think you're the only person that I've ever heard of who's read 1,900 pages of the bill, but thank you very much for your call, and we're going to take some more stories in just a moment. Just a quick reaction. I think he was responding to something you said, Isaiah, about whether or not this is really about $17 trillion in government debt or whether or not this is about having the people who have already been hired to do jobs for the government continue to do those jobs.
Well, like I said, I don't have a problem with. And first of all, I appreciate his comments. I'm not one to shy away from any form of criticism. So, to the gentleman in Danbury, thank you very much for your comments. And we can agree to disagree. But the reality is that I'm focusing on things from a long term basis. Because and I agree, we shouldn't be fighting and throwing balls at the room. All of our elected officials are stewards. We all are simply stewards of the American government. Yes, we do need to get together, but I feel like there needs to be more negotiations so that we come up with a reasonable agreement to get things moving along.
I mean, just long term, though, it's very dangerous to set up a situation where you can't pay your debts, where you borrow money and then put yourself in a position where you can't pay it. It's never happened in the United States before. It's why Treasury bills are this incredible asset. And, we are taking our golden eggs and coating them with dust. And long term, that's really scary. And that the long term consequences for that far exceed any bump up in spending that we might be talking about.
And before you go, Bill, I just want to get to Miles in Glastonbury because I don't want to lose his call. Miles, go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a furloughed federal worker, and I just wanted to say I appreciate the coverage from NPR and some other outlets who have looked at this issue beyond the 50-50, half Democrat, half Republican, everyone. Because really what we have here is an issue where, as Harry Reid said it, if there's a Republican in the White House, and Democrats said that they weren't going to lift the debt ceiling without passing background checks for guns. I mean, we'd be having insurrection. This is just not the way to run the country. And the Republicans have taken it to the next level of threats and hostage taking. That is really, I believe, a threat to the democratic process.
Miles, thank you very much for your phone call. Can I just ask very quickly what you do for the federal government? Are you allowed to say?
I can't say the agency. I'm an auditor of other agencies.
Wow, so. Good luck.
Yeah. Miles, thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your phone call, and thanks for joining us. Bill, I know you wanted to jump in.
Well, just again, first of all, the budget we're talking about, I just want to respond to Isaiah on a couple of factual points. And the continuing resolutions we're talking about are for the sequester level funding, which is below what Republicans just a few months ago said they thought we should be spending. They thought that many of the sequester cuts were too severe, and they joined Democrats in saying they would adopt the policy only because only an insane person would get that low. We also have the record of 80 Republicans signing the letter that started this, saying their purpose was to abolish Obamacare, and the record of a $200 million campaign to get a shutdown to get to Obamacare. And so it's not about that budget. When their own budget increases the debt by $1 trillion, when the current spending is below what they say they want, and all they talk about is Obamacare, we know what they're doing. And the second thing, I just want to go to what Colin said, which is I agree with strongly, except that it's not just the long-term effect of the shutdown in the budget. Right now, those T-bills are the cornerstone of our economy. If you're out there right now, this doesn't have to be a huge apocalyptic default, and Obama should get off that theme. If you're out there right now and your variable rate mortgage is on the line in the next couple of months, your payments are going up. Mm. Your credit card rates are going up. We already can't get money to small businesses. Their rates go up. When T-bills cost more, the state and local governments have to pay more interest to borrow because they're competing in the same market. So all our taxes, state, local, and federal, go up because of this now. Mortgages are going up now. All the small businesses by those 800 parks are being laid off now. This is an immediate – it doesn't have to be what's triggered. It's what's happening.
And some of what's happening, Daniela, is real effects to Connecticut people. We've been hearing some stories on our air, people calling up saying that they are furloughed because of the shutdown. What is happening that you're seeing to people right here in Connecticut who are being affected by this?
Well, I think primarily there's a lot of anger on an emotional level, I think, on the part of everybody, whether you're a federal worker or whether you're just a person who maybe doesn't even, you know, if you're not a cancer patient waiting for a cancer trial, if you're not planning a trip to Yellowstone, maybe this doesn't affect you directly day in and day out yet. But I do think there's just a lot of anger and frustration on the part of the average citizen. Why can't they just get it together? And, you know, you can say who's to blame or who brought this on. I think we all know who brought it on. But in the end, it could hurt all the politicians, Democrat, Republican. I mean, this is something that, you know, voters seem pretty angry.
We're hearing about veterans benefits being delayed in Connecticut for people who are working at the VA hospitals in our state, those folks not being able to go to work, the shutdown also actually causing a little bit of a delay in a prison transfer that we've been hearing an awful lot about, something that we've covered here on the air. The federal prisoners in Danbury who's supposed to be moved to Alabama, now temporarily they're not being moved.
Yeah, they've halted that, and I think for Chris Murphy and Senator Blumenthal, who are, you know, opposed to that transfer, that's maybe the one silver lining of this whole thing. They're happy about that.
Isaiah?
Yeah, and I also wanted to add that the House did submit a bill that would provide a back pay to all the people who are losing out and who are furloughed right now, but that bill was also rejected. It's not like the Republicans are not trying to work at a resolution. Nobody wants the government to shut down.
I think at the end of the day, it's pretty clear that back pay is going to come back for the people who have been furloughed during this time. Colin, I know you wrote it about a little bit. I mean, we're hearing some of these individual stories. I mean, what's the sense from you of how long this can go until people really start to say, look, we can't have a non-functioning government. We can't have people who are doing things that we see as critical not being able to go to work or not getting paid to do that work they're doing.
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I first of all, I think probably the debt ceiling issue is going to come to a head faster than the shutdown issue. In other words, there's money sitting in the pipeline in various places. So as Danielle, I can tell you, you know, here in Connecticut, they kept WIC going. They've kept a lot of the veterans benefits going. There's money sitting in the pipeline. You get into November, it gets a little bit more complicated because the money isn't sitting in the pipeline. And Connecticut doesn't have a lot of resources to draw on to make up the payments that they make that are reimbursed by the federal government. So, yeah, you start hitting various things. We just got a $10 million bequest. Or actually, it's a no-interest loan from a former hedge fund trader to keep the Head Start facilities open in six different states. I mean, when hedge fund traders are saving Head Start, you know things have gotten kind of crazy. I'm guessing November will be tougher than October. But other than that, I don't know the answer to that question.
We just have about 30 seconds or so. So what I'm going to do is go to a break. I'll tell all the people who are on the line who want to join our conversation, you can just hang on for a moment as we try to pay some of our bills here. We're talking with Colin McEnroe and Bill Curry, Isaiah Diaz and Danielle Altamari. And we're speaking of deficits, we're going to try to raise some money for public radio right now. But hang on as we continue our conversation about the government shutdown and some other issues in the news coming up next on The Wheelhouse on WNPR. And we will be going back to the Wheelhouse edition of Where We Live in just a moment. But I'm Jack Callahan, along with Kyone Wolf, taking these minutes to ask you to support Where We Live right here on WNPR, WNPR's own program that you listen to right here weekdays at 9 o'clock in the morning and again a repeat in the evening at 7. But this comes with a price tag, and that's where you come in, asking you as a listener who values this type of conversation, this type of discourse, to step up to the plate and make the most generous contribution your budget allows. The number to call is 1-800-584-2788. Again, let me say the number one more time, 1-800-584-2788.
You know, it's funny. I always feel like really lucky to have Where We Live, Colin McEnroe, Faith Middleton, these three locally produced shows, which is not common in the world of public radio, but I always feel really lucky. But when it comes down to it, it's not luck at all. It's people giving money to us, saying we support your efforts, we want you to keep going, and it's the culmination of a really great, very small staff working on a shoestring budget. So when we say that we make the most of your pledge when you call or you go online, I can't tell you how much we make the most of it. So if you could support us, we will take your pledge and make it into something that you feel lucky to have. The number is 1-800-584-2788, or you can go online at WNPR.org.
Yes, in fact, Kyone, a growing number of our supporters are choosing to go on the web, such as a friend from South Windsor just did a few minutes ago. Thank you so much for that contribution. That's how it works. It's whether you click or call, each donation is added together, and that's my job as the membership person here to see that we have the dollars we need for you to go back and turn this into great programming here. I'm part of WNPR, but I'm not part of the news team, so I can say, stepping back a little bit, how pleased I am and how proud I am to be part of this team. And it's made possible by listeners who take action and by calling 1-800-584-2788. Very quickly, let me suggest at the $10 a month level when you become a monthly donor, and Kyone will tell you a bit more about that in a moment, that we could get your name on the list to receive an L.L. Bean holiday wreath. It's 24 inches in diameter, more than 4 pounds of greens, and it has decorations of holly berries and crabapple and reindeer moss and large bow, very traditional holiday style, and it's been very well received here. This will ship in late November. We can send it anywhere. In fact, Kyone, some folks make a $20 a month contribution, have one wreath come to them, and they send it to someone. I call it exporting a bit of New England to someone maybe who's an expat, no longer is here, but would love to have that holiday smell when they open up that box. The number to call is 1-800-584-2788, or you can go online at WNPR.org.
Your shipping envy is really, that's what we like to do. You know, so some people like to donate one hit, $40, $60, however much sort of fits into their budget in one fell swoop, and they can feel good till the next time we come and ask you for money. But some people do the monthly donor program, which has made a huge difference in how we run these fundraising weeks. They've actually shortened it quite a bit. So the way that works is pretty simple. You can call 1-800-584-2788, or you can go to WNPR.org, and you can decide to you know, give $5 a month, $10 a month, you probably won't even feel it. In fact, you know, when you look at your online statement and you see your electric bill come out or your car payment or whatever you're automatically doing, when you see that bit come out for Connecticut Public Radio, it's finally a bill that you pay that you feel good about, which is pretty rare. So you can do that, and that helps support us and keep these fundraisers a little bit shorter. So the more people that do that, the shorter our fundraisers can get, and we definitely appreciate it. So if you've got this number memorized, it's probably a clue that you should go ahead and pledge. So 1-800-584-2788. Or go to WNPR.org.
Yeah, there's a donate button right at the top there. It's red and quite noticeable for you to find. And we don't care whether you click or whether you call, but we are asking you to make today the day to support this type of discourse. John Denkoski, we call him the convener of conversations. Whether it's a guest who is in the studio, a guest who joins us through the phone lines, or our participants, our listeners who actually call in and become part of the conversation, many send tweets and emails as well to participate. All around, though, discourse, conversation, sharing of ideas, looking at other perspectives, disagreeing, absolutely, but in a style that is
accessible.
That's the right word. And we're going back to this in just about 30 seconds, but we're asking you to call 1-800-584-2788. Phones will be open during the program. About 20 seconds, Kayon.
We could have been playing Diane Rehm right now, but we know that you want to invest in local talk about international issues. We know how important it is to you. That's why you're listening. So please give us a call and support it. I promise you'll feel so good. 1-800-584-2788 or WNPR.org. And thank you so much.
This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up this Friday evening, October 11th, I hope you can join WNPR senior producer Katie Solarski for an Ear Cave listening session at our brand new temporary storefront on Trumbull Street. It's part of the iConnect project in the city of Hartford. There'll be a DJ, a fashion show all taking place on Pratt Street and Trumbull Street right downtown as they kick off iConnect. Katie Solarski's Ear Cave will be part of it. What is an Ear Cave? Well, it's a listening session with great radio documentary work. Hope you can join us on Friday night. Today on the program, it's The Wheelhouse, our weekly news roundtable. We're joined by Colin McEnroe, Bill Curry, Isaiah Diaz, and Danielle Altamari. We're taking some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. We've been talking a lot about the debt ceiling and about the partial government shutdown. So let's get to some quick phone calls here before we move on. Pat's in Franklin. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, folks. Hey, in this discussions I've heard, you know, with the current events, I haven't heard anything mentioned, and maybe your guest could answer me. What are they proposing to raise the debt limit to? How much money? Who's paying for it? And how are we paying for it? I think the last time someone said we upped to $17 trillion on our credit card. And is this going to be a repetitive thing? Every 5 years, the taxpayers have to ante up more money for a bigger government? Or is this something that's going to slowly, we can just pay the bills and cut some spending?
That's a Bill question.
Bill. It's a Bill Curry question. So we're going to have a Bill answer and then an Isaiah answer.
Yeah. Let me say the one sentence, and most important one sentence answer is I don't know. To the question, what's the exact number of the debt increase? The second thing, though, is that something that Obama said that is true is that the debt's been cut the projected debt's been cut in half over the last 6 to 8 months. It's actually been moving in the right direction. The sequester is the current level of spending is a more radical reduction than anyone had anticipated. Neither budget, however, deals with long-term debt, when dealt with honestly. And the third thing I'd just say is the debt ceiling. Don't think about the debt ceiling. Think about the budget. Think about what parts of the budget you want to reduce. One of the amazing things about this discussion is how abstract it is. Nobody knows which part of Obamacare Boehner wants to get rid of. The Republicans are never made to say which programs they want to cut because concreteness and specificity are their enemy. And unfortunately, both sides talk that way.
Well, I think as we heard
earlier
from Isaiah,
the talking points of both sides discredit them.
But let's just take one thing. I think Republicans want to get rid of the individual mandate as part of Obamacare. The problem with that is that if you take that out, the entire system doesn't work, according to Barack Obama and those who put the ACA together. I know that you had a quick response, Isaiah, for Pat here.
Yes, based on, and again, there's bills being submitted every, you know, every hour. But the last information that I've gotten with regard to the debt ceiling, and one of the reasons why it's a huge battle, is that the Senate proposed to have a holiday on the debt ceiling up until the 2014 election. So like I said earlier, one of the proposals is that give us a blank credit card so we can do what we need to do, and then we'll deal with it after 2014. Again, there's been bills back and forth, but that's one of the ones that I've come across.
It's not a holiday. They've asked for a shorter extension of the debt period, extension of the debt ceiling, than historically we've done in almost any decade of our history. They just asked for a 15-month extension, a short one. By historical standards, not a long one.
I just want to move on to Sandra in Stamford, get a few more phone calls in here. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think there's something extremely serious going on. I would call it a coup d'etat. This country is a democracy, and part of how well off we've been has to do with how stable a country we are as compared to countries that have civil wars, you know, regularly, and that has to do with our the integrity of our democratic system. That one party would decide, you know, if John Boehner and Ted Cruz went out and kidnapped five families and said, we're not going to do, you know, you've got to do what we say, you know, because we've taken these people hostage. Of course we wouldn't buy into that and listen to that. But they've done something much worse. They've taken the entire country hostage, our veterans, our elderly, our children, our middle class, our government workers, the economy hostage to something that David Koch planned at least a year ago and has funded.
Sandra,
the idea of shutting down a government as political leverage.
And Sandra, thank you very much for that. And I will say, a lot of what you just said is what we heard coming out of President Obama's mouth yesterday. I will say, Sandra said it to my ear with a little bit more of the anger and passion, perhaps, that President Obama might use if he's trying to make this message, Colin.
Yeah, and you know, and when you look at how this plays overseas, how it's reported on overseas, one British commentator said, you know who's actually continuing to pay their employees and honoring their debts? Syria. And they have some pretty significant problems over there.
Let's go to Alexander in Guilford quickly. Alexander, go ahead.
Hi there. There's a big problem with how we and you and the right and the left are talking about this whole situation and trying to find a household analogy to make it simpler. It's not a household. The government doesn't work like a household. But if we were to try to do that, then it's not like a blank credit card or a blank check. It's like you've got bills coming in. You've got all of your subscriptions still going on, but you are tearing up both that is the debt ceiling to not raise it would be to tear up all of your checks, tear up all of your credit cards so that the bills keep coming in. Only it's not a household. It's a town or a whole state. So what happens to the economic activity when everyone stops having access to what they need to pay the bills? The bills are coming in, the purchasing is going on, and yet you're tearing up the checkbook because to raise the debt ceiling is like a check, and you're getting rid of all of your credit cards. You can't pay your bills by credit card because to raise the debt ceiling is to give them a blank credit card.
And I think the most important point, Alexander, is as we quickly move on, is at the end of this, our credit rating, that thing that you get from the three agencies, will probably be pretty bad. It might make it hard for us to buy a car. Yes, I know you don't like the household analogies. We're going to move on. Thank you very much for your phone call. I know, Danielle Altimeri, something else happened in Washington last week other than the shutdown, but it in many ways was informed by the tension around the shutdown. Just a few weeks after a gunman killed 12 people at the Navy Yard, gunshots rang out around the Capitol. We were watching it in the newsroom, and everyone was very scared. The Capitol went on shutdown. We later found that the gunfire itself came from law enforcement and that a woman from Stanford, Connecticut, was actually killed. Now, Valerie Carey is the sister of Miriam Carey, who was speaking to reporters last week. This is what Valerie Carey had to say.
Why was my sister shot and killed with her one-year-old daughter in the car and she was unarmed? Why? My mother deserves to know why. We deserve to know why.
So, Danielle, what more do we know about this case? We know that Miriam Carey was someone who had some mental problems. We know that she threatened law enforcement with her car. But I think there's still a lot of questions about why she died the way she did.
There are a lot of questions. And you know, the family is asking them. Official agencies will be asking them as well. It's obviously a really sad, sad situation. The more you learn about this woman's life, just, you know, very heartbreaking. On the other hand, you know, again, we don't have the answers, but it's easy to sort of look after the fact and say, you know, why did she have to die? And again, very, very sad. But in the heat of the moment, you know, who knows? The officers had no idea what was going on in that car. They had no idea what was inside that car. This is, you know, as you pointed out, a city on edge, given what's happened there, both, you know, with the shooting and with the shutdown. And there's a lot of tension, and these are the most, you know, these are targets. The White House, the U.S. Capitol, these are terrorist targets. So obviously the protocols are going to be a little different than if it were downtown Hartford.
You know, Jim Himes, a congressman from Fairfield County, said both the White House and Capitols have a different context.
Yeah.
Both are terrorist targets. People who protect those sites probably have different things in mind than the average cop on the street. Bill, you've worked in Washington, maybe at a time when maybe there's less tension. This is pre-9/11. But at the same point, give me your take on this.
I was there when we put all the concrete barriers in front of the White House.
Yeah.
It was very much of
it. It didn't used to be like that. Yeah.
And I was one day you're walking up and down Pennsylvania Avenue. The next day you're not. Let me just say, I don't want to trivialize this woman's death by subsuming it in a question of public policy. But think about Newtown and think about Miriam Carey. And there are 100 other examples, but that raised the issues of our mental health system. We have these discrete discussions that are never connected. The fact of the matter is that after Newtown, we were all talking about the need to strengthen the mental health system. While there's much I don't like about this health care law, it does, in fact, do an extraordinary amount to make healthcare more available, mental health care more available to people. And we have example after example of cases in which the real issue here is far beyond my understanding. It is emotional. And the question is, how good a job are we doing of reaching these people? One of the good things about what's just happened is that more people like that will be reached.
Mm. I want to move on to just one last thing here as we run low on time on our program. And I'm going to turn to Colin McEnroe for this. You wrote the other day very lovingly about someone who I didn't know, but who was a giant in the newspaper industry here sometime before I came to Connecticut. Who was Irving Kravsow?
Irving Kravsow was at times the city editor and later the managing editor of the Hartford Courant. It was kind of in a different era, you know, during the break while you guys were getting donuts. Daniela and I, Daniela is at the Courant now. I was at the Courant full time for 20 years. Those of us who used to be here always kind of reach out and touch the other person and go, how are you? How's everything going? Because newspapers are in such poor shape right now, and Tribune really has been a pretty tough experience for the Courant. It was a very different era. The Courant was a much, much bigger newspaper. Irving was an old school journalist. I would not have called him a visionary, but he had that idea about how newspapers should function. They functioned a little bit differently, too. I mean, at the Courant in those days, because it was a morning newspaper, was full of people at night. It's kind of funny even talking about the security stuff. The Courant's on Broad Street, which is, you know, a somewhat unsettled area of Hartford. The front door in those days was open. There was no security guard. We worked on the third floor. People would just walk in off the street and take the elevator up to the third floor and, you know, tell us what they thought that we needed to know. And this is at 11 o'clock at night, so you met some pretty interesting people that way. But I guess the other thing I was thinking in writing about Irving, too, is that increasingly one thing that newspapers don't do as well as they used to is memorialize people, write obits. You know, the Times still does these fabulous obits, but the Courant doesn't have the staff it used to. Most newspapers don't. And you know, I mean, a good obit, a good just reconstruction of somebody's life, a good memory of somebody is such an incredible service, and it's kind of a teaching opportunity, too.
Did you work with him, Danielle?
I did not. No, he was before my time.
You though, I think, have probably been around long enough to have seen some of the changes that Colin is talking about to the newspaper where you work today, those days in which it was a much different, bigger newspaper than it is today.
Very different. When reading the appreciations of him, I was wondering what would he think of Twitter and all the things that we're doing now and, you know, online versus the old school way. It's interesting.
Well, and that's one of the things I think to maybe leave here, Colin. As I read about this and I read about people who come from a different era of telling stories about the news, it does make me think an awful lot about the news world that we have today. And so much of even what we talk about here on The Wheelhouse comes from our obsession with things that are happening by the minute, all the time, 24 hours, on a crawl beneath the screen. And there was a very different tempo to the world that Irving worked in. And I guess I'm wondering, as Danielle asked, how he might react to covering the news of today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible to romanticize the past. And the present, for that matter. And in terms of romanticizing the present, I mean, I think, you know, because Twitter and things like that chop up our day so much, sometimes we don't really have quite the same urgency to get a story nailed down that fast. Instead, it's sort of, you know, it's we're nibbling stories to death like a thousand ducks or something. And I don't think Irving would have liked Twitter or anything like that. But one of the nice things about the old rhythm was you really did sort of have to make sure you got the story and you got it within a certain window. And in an odd way, I think stories kind of drag on a little bit and sometimes aren't reported on quite as promptly now because they can be partially reported on.
You could tweet on it.
Yeah, yes, for days and days and days.
And do this tweet at it for just a few days. And then it's not the idea of bringing home a big story at the end. Just one last story, Colin. I mean, do you have a story you can tell us about him editing you or a story of an interaction that might give us a flavor of the old current?
Well, the flavor of the when I arrived, Irving had married late in life and he had calmed down quite a bit. The old stories were that he would come out and kick your waste paper basket and literally throw your copy in your face and yell at you and stuff like that.
Colin McEnroe, of course, the host of WNPR's The Colin McEnroe Show. He's talking a lot about football this afternoon at 1 o'clock today. Thank you, as always, Colin. Thanks to Bill Curry, our Democratic political analyst, and to Isaiah Diaz from the Latino and Puerto Rican Affairs Commission, Danielle Altamari from the aforementioned Hartford Current. Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Betsy Kaplan, and the senior producer is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankowski. This is Where We Live.
Listen to Where We Live. I'm Kyone Wolf here with Jack Callahan, and you know why we're here. We'd like you to pick up the phone and call 1-800-584-2788 or go to WNPR.org because we rely on your support to make all this happen. And we also want you to change the way you listen to these fundraisers. If you've never given before or it's been a really long time since you gave, you listen to these fundraisers and you feel this sense of guilt and pressure to call in. Well, we want you to listen to it with a sense of smugness, saying, yeah, I've already done it. I've done my part, and I still support this station. So your contribution, starting at the $40 level or whatever's right for you, will help our Where We Live team, our Colin McEnroe team, our Faith Middleton team go out on the road, spend more time and resources hearing the voices of the people who live in Connecticut and the surrounding area to talk about what really, really matters to us. So we'll make the most of it when you call 1-800-584-2788 or go to WNPR.org.
Today's conversation was jam-packed with issues that are pressing today and on top of mind, including the shooting incident last week and that different perspective on that. Other days, though, John is talking with artists, with authors, and we come away from this program inspired. Whether we come away informed or inspired or sometimes even a little riled up, because we don't program just to give people what they want to hear. We program for different ideas, and that's a large part of what we do. Asking you to stand up, support that type of programming. It's not found on every place on the dial. In fact, it's not found on many other places, if at all. Do stand up, take action, stand with and behind Where We Live right now by making a contribution. That number is 1-800-584-2788, or you can go online at WNPR.org. Kyone and I do not have time to talk about our thank you gifts, but they are all listed online. You can see them there or talk when you make that call.
And when you listen to public radio, you make a choice. You make a choice to keep that pre-programmed button on us. Some people will program other people's buttons to the local NPR station, which is so cool. So if you make the choice to listen to us, we're asking you to make a choice to call in and support us. It shows what your priorities are, what your tastes, what your worldviews are. And so we're asking you, please, to make the choice to call us at 1-800-584-2788 or WNPR.org.
I want to thank some folks who here. We've just had an online gift from Terryville and Martin from Wyndham Fonden. Thank you so much for your generous contribution. And Alfred from West Hartford, he says that Kyone's a gem. She is. Mm. They're all gems here.
Thanks.
Every one of the WNPR staff, because they work on your behalf. Support what they do. Support what you listen to every day. 1-800-584-2788 is the number to call, or go online at WNPR.org. We're moving on to another program, but the phones will be open, and you can always make that online contribution. Thank you so much in advance.